stared at it, marveled at its beauty, its genius. Billions of people just living out their lives.
You know that the first Matrix was designed to be a perfect human world where none suffered, where everyone would be happy. It was a disaster. No one would accept the program. Entire crops were lost. Some believed that we lacked the programming language to describe your perfect world, but I believe that as a species, human beings define their reality through misery and suffering.
What's up, everybody? You're listening to Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture. I'm your host, Isaac Weishaupt. Today we're covering the second half of the first Matrix film from 1999. A classic, maybe the greatest film of all time, which would make sense, because it's modeled on the greatest story of all time, or maybe a Gnostic perversion of the Christian tale. But today, you know, with the first Matrix, we started talking about the symbolism of the story, some of the messages. We danced around some of the philosophies. We introduced the characters. We talked about their role in the film. But today, we're going to finish the second half of the film, the plot. So, of course, plot spoilers. Come on, you knew that. And we're going to, you know, obviously continue to explore the symbolism of the film, discuss the ideas of the human species as a virus. And we're going to journey into the philosophies behind the Matrix. We're going to get real, real stuffy, real nerdy, straight from a book I have that I've had for, I don't know how long I've had this book, 20 years, The Matrix and Philosophy, because ironically, when the Matrix movies were wrapping up in 2003, 4, whatever that was, I was in college and I took an intro to philosophy course and I thought it was really interesting. So I was really nerding out on philosophy, and that's probably one of the reasons why the Matrix films really blew my mind, right? So today we're going to continue on the journey. Now, to put this in perspective, because I've got a lot of Matrix shows coming, okay? Maybe you like it, maybe you don't, but you're going to learn a lot along the way. You're going to love it. What are we talking about here? So part one, what we already aired, is the first half of The Matrix 1. Today, you're listening to the second half of The Matrix 1. The next episode is going to be the Matrix Reloaded, The Matrix 2, which is going to be episode 3 in the arc of podcast. Then we're going to hit Matrix Revolutions, which will be the fourth episode in the arc. Then we might hit the Animatrix. I don't know yet. That might just be a bonus show because there's not a ton to talk about. But it does go into the origin story a little bit deeper of how The Matrix started. That might just be a bonus show for the supporters, you know? You know, they support the show, I gotta give back, right? I gotta show my appreciation. So I'm thinking the Animatrix will be a bonus show. Don't quote me on that. And then of course, we're gonna talk about The Matrix Resurrections. Yes, the new one coming out December 22nd. Will I see it on December 22nd? Absolutely not. I don't know when I'm going to get around to watching this because, you know, I made a promise to my dear friend Jimmy the Jackhammer that we would watch this together, and he's got his hands full with some personal issues right now, so I've got to play this game of when's my man ready to do this? When's he ready to hit the movie? So unfortunately, we're all waiting. So throw your thoughts and prayers up for Jimmy the Jackhammer. Because the sooner the good Lord puts his blessings upon him and his family, the sooner you're going to get the Matrix Resurrections show. All right? We all got something at stake here, okay? So join me. Now, let's, you know, without further ado, well, you know, there is further ado. There is going to be further ado. I've got something to tell you. A big old apology for my man Barry, okay? I did tier 4 dedications, the last one ever, on the last show, on the first Matrix show. And I missed Barry. I don't know how that happened. I exported the list, which made it a no-brainer. I don't know what to tell you. The Matrix got all tangled up. I missed Barry, so please accept my humble apology. You know, we had some messaging back and forth on the Patreon, me and Barry. And he sounds like a good dude. He sounds just like me, right? Like, we're both Christians, but not good ones. You know, I always say I'm a real shitty Christian. That's why I don't like pushing my beliefs, same as him. He doesn't like to judge people with their lifestyles because it's like, you know what? We got our own crosses to bear. We've got our own situations to deal with. I certainly can't be consumed with how other people live their lives. I hope the best for them. But, you know, I've got my own thing to deal with. But, yeah, anyway, so Barry, check your... Oh, and then he said he's very concerned about metaverse, virtual reality, Mark of the Beast. Right? Same here. That's what I think the big end game is all about the transhuman movement. Which, ironically, plays into the Matrix today, when we talk about the Agent Smith and the Matrix AI robots, the fallen angel demons from hell. They think that the humans are a virus, which fits into this whole transhumanism thing of like, look, we gotta wipe out the human race and start over with something better, something superior. So yeah, shout out Barry. Check your Patreon messages. I'm gonna send you a shirt. You're gonna get a shirt, old buddy. Yeah, and then I don't know if you saw my Instagram. Speaking of the shirts, I got some 70s Ringer shirts coming in. I don't know when they're coming in. They should be soon. I modeled it on the Instagram. I think it was my first post to ever get over 1,000 likes. So thank you if you liked, if you smashed the like button on the Instagram. I was doing my, someone called me like a gay pirate in a good way, right? I'll take it. So check out that image on the Instagram at Isaac Weishaupt, link in the show notes. Yeah. All right. Okay. That was the ado. No more further ado. Let's get into the Matrix. Now, if you don't know where we're at in the storyline, Morpheus red pills Neo. He's like, oh, by the way, you're going to be the one to save all of humanity. He goes and talks to the Oracle, and the Oracle is giving him this weird back and forth about fate versus free will, you know? And that's kind of where we left off, with Neo questioning, like, well, you know, I believe in free will, but yet everyone's telling me I'm the one, which means fate is determinism, what they call in philosophy. Then how's the Oracle know things unless fate was true, unless the whole storyline has already been written? And that's kind of where we left off. So she blows Neo's mind. He doesn't know what to think. And Morpheus and crew, they're escorting Neo back to the real world. And he stops and he sees a black cat. And he's like, oh, he's like, whoa, that's weird. And Trinity's like, what's weird? And he says, I just saw a black cat. I already saw that. It's like deja vu. And they said, oh, snap. It's a glitch in the Matrix, right? And they start freaking out. That means the agents are made a change and they're going to attack, right? So the agents attack. They want to get at Morpheus because behind the scenes, Lucifer, he's helping the agents. Because remember, he made that Faustian bargain that he's going to go back into the Matrix, into this world of bliss and ignorance, and to be a celebrity rock god or whatever he decides, you know. He wants to be an actor, I think is what he says. So there's some fighting in the Matrix and some fighting in the real world. Tank and Dozier, they get blasted. Mouse is dead. Things are going crazy, right? Pure chaos. Well, they kind of get out of the situation, and Agent Smith, he is talking about how, if you listen, I'm going to play this clip. Agent Smith is talking about how the first Matrix was too perfect, right? Because he's got Morpheus tied. Let me back up. So they capture Morpheus. Okay, sorry. Big part of the big plot. A hole I missed. So they attack. They get Morpheus. And they chain Morpheus up to the chair because Morpheus has the codes to Zion in his head. And they're going to get those codes so they can wipe out humanity. Because that's what the agents do. And Agent Smith is talking to Morpheus about how the first Matrix was too perfect. And the humans kept trying to wake up because it was too perfect. And we're all just a bunch of miserable viruses. And the AI is doing the thinking for the civilization. Thus, it is their civilization. Take a listen.
Have you ever stood and stared at it? Marveled at its beauty? Its genius? Billions of people just living out their lives. Oblivious. Did you know that the first Matrix was designed to be a perfect human world where none suffered, where everyone would be happy? It was a disaster. No one would accept the program. Entire crops were lost. Some believed that we lacked the programming language to describe your perfect world, but I believe that as a species, human beings define their reality through misery and suffering. So the perfect world was a dream that your primitive cerebrum kept trying to wake up from. Which is why the Matrix was redesigned to this, the peak of your civilization. I say your civilization, because as soon as we started thinking for you, it really became our civilization, which is, of course, what this is all about. Evolution, Morpheus. Evolution. Like the dinosaur. Look out that window. You had your time. The future is our world, Morpheus. The future is our time.
There could be a problem.
So you'll hear Agent Smith, you know, he's talking trash to Morpheus while Morpheus is all chained up. And you're like, bro, you better keep that same energy when Neo shows up, Agent Smith. And Agent Smith says, you know what, that's what this is all about, Morpheus. It's all about evolution, because again, when we talk about the transhuman movement, this is how some of these psychopaths think. They think that the human condition is so flawed, God's creation is such a mess, that they need to wipe the slate clean and evolve us into something better. Them, the digital perfection, right? Meanwhile, back on the Nebuchadnezzar, like I said, Cypher is fighting Tank, Dozier, Mouse. He's like killing everybody. But Tank, he got blasted, but somehow he like gets up, right? He's got one last burst of energy. Like in wrestling, when the tag team, the one guy's down bad, but he's got just enough to, you know, tag out. Then 2 seconds later, he's got enough energy to come back in. But Tank, he's got enough energy, and he kills Cypher. And he's like, now he's like, look, we got to get, they're looking at how they can keep Morpheus from revealing the codes to Zion in the Matrix. And one idea that they're talking about, he's like, bro, we got to kill Morpheus. There's no way around this. They're going to get those codes and we're all going to die anyhow. We got to kill Morpheus. And they're like, should we pull the obelisk from the back of his head? And then Neo, he recalls the Oracle and her prophecy. And he's like, you know what? Let me try something. Let me go back into the Matrix. I'm going to save Morpheus. Because the Oracle told me I'd have to make a choice of my life versus Morpheus's life. And And, you know, but the Oracle told him that later he'll feel better because he doesn't believe in any of this fate crap. Right? Remember that? So here's the moment where Neo, who was conflicted, but before he was very much a free agent kind of guy. He's like, no way, fate's crap. I don't believe it. He meets the Oracle and then he's kind of like conflicted. Like, well, maybe. But now he's like, whoa, maybe this is real. Maybe I am the one. So he's like, I'm going in. And Agent Smith, he's still talking trash. He's talking trash. And here's the part where he tells Morpheus about how the human beings are a cancer to the planet, which is the same argument we hear from the Illuminati, right? In American Horror Story Apocalypse. That royal family prince guy, I don't remember which one, said he wanted to come back as a virus and kill all of humanity. It's like this weird nihilism that they embrace of destroying the world to rebuild it into their vision.
I'd like to share a revelation that I've had during my time here. It came to me when I tried to classify your species. I realized that you're not actually mammals. Every mammal on this planet instinctively develops a natural equilibrium with the surrounding environment, but you humans do not. You move to an area and you multiply and multiply until every natural resource is consumed. And the only way you can survive is to spread to another area. There is another organism on this planet that follows the same pattern. Do you know what it is? A virus. Human beings are a disease, a cancer of this planet. You are a plague, and we are the cure.
So Agent Smith, this is what's interesting. He literally calls the world a prison, which is, you know, Gnosticism 101, the idea of the prison planet, the simulation theory, all of that. So Neo and Trinity, they break into the building because now they're going to save Morpheus. And we're given quite possibly the greatest action sequence in film history, maybe. For sure, in 1999, if you watch this scene, it blew your mind. There was, you know, fighting and gunplay and special effects and slow motion and bullet time. It leads up to the helicopter scene where Neo, he saves Trinity by pulling the cable. Like, come on. Come on. Even Tang's like, I knew it. He's the one. Because he's defying all the laws of space, time, and gravity. And what's interesting, I'm going to throw this photo on the Instagram, by the way. Trinity, she carries Neo and Morpheus on the helicopter, and we see a bird logo on this building, this MM1 building, and you see the phoenix, which ties us into some ideas of alchemy, and the one, Neo, being reborn and rising from the ashes. Because in the stories, in the movies, plot spoiler, but you know, he dies and comes back to life. Right? He's the Phoenix. So Neo's in the Matrix now. They got Morpheus. He's fighting the agents. We get the infamous bullet time action sequence. Neo dodges the bullets, transcending space and time. This is his moment of transfiguration. This is his Christ moment. When everyone witnessing it says, whoa, he really is Christ. He really is a God. And now he even knows it. He's fighting Mr. Smith, and he says, and Mr. Smith's like, I'm going to enjoy watching you die, Mr. Anderson, which is the same as the demiurge in the Gnostic tale, enjoying watching the death of the human race. So Neo, he's trying to exit at this point. He's got everyone else out, and he's like, okay, I'm done fighting these clowns. He races to the phone to exit. Tank, he's guiding him through the Matrix. He's like, go to room 303. Now, here's what's interesting. Do you recall from the last episode, the start of the film talked about room 303. That's where Trinity was. Do you remember that? Yes, you do. Room 303. So at the beginning, it's like the Alpha and Omega in a way. We started the tale in room 303, and now we're going to finish the tale in the room 303. Pretty amazing. And what's curious, if you listen to... Actually, this was a bonus show I did on a book called Infernal Geometry, The Order of Nine Angles, The Satanic Cult. And I went through the whole book that they wrote. This was after the William Ramsey show. This was a bonus show only for the supporters. Shout out my supporters. And I'm going to read you what we talked about. We talked about the idea that the number nine symbolically always returns to itself, right? Because when you add up the digits, they always add up to or can be reduced to nine. What I'm saying is if you do 9 times 3, you got 27. 2 plus 7 equals 9. 9 times 123 equals 1107. You add the 1, the 7, you get 9. So 303 is the same idea. 3 times 3 is 9. It's the idea that 9 always returns to itself. And Neo, in this story, again, plot spoiler, he ends up returning back to Machine City, back to the source, back to God. Interesting stuff going on in this movie. Okay, so we're at the end of the movie. Neo's fighting Agent Smith. He can't make it to the phone. He gets blasted with 100 shots, and he dies. Literally flatlines. But then he comes back to life. Why does he come back to life? It's because Trinity, she's back at the Nebuchadnezzar, and she's like, the Oracle told me I would fall in love with the One. So she says, you know, he's the One. I love him. And it's not until she expresses her love to him and kisses him, he comes back to life like Christ. Through love, he comes back to life. And Agent Smith can't believe it. He's like, bro, I shot you 1,000,000 times. And he absorbs all the bullets. And it's a wrap. You know what I'm saying? It's a wrap because he then is able to stop the bullets, fly into the agents, and blow them into smithereens. He's breaking every rule of the Matrix at this point. And then that's basically how the first film ends. And they give you a little implication that the Morpheus and Neo and Trinity, they're on a mission to wake up minds that are trapped in the Matrix, which is kind of confirmed in the Animatrix. That's kind of what they'd spend their time doing between films, right? So, in conclusion, final thoughts about The Matrix 1. Who was right? Was it the deterministic fate seeker Morpheus and the Oracle? You know, it can't be because the Oracle said Neo or Morpheus would have to die. Remember that? So the Oracle's kind of wrong. Fate is kind of wrong. But maybe she was right in the sense that the old Neo did die. Right? We always talk about the initiation ritual, how the candidates must be reborn. They are baptized into the new world, into the new philosophy. So the old Neo did in fact die. Remember, she said, you've got a choice. You can either save yourself or Morpheus. He saves Morpheus and he dies. And it's true. It happened. But then he was reborn. He's the dying and resurrected God. So he's kind of right, you know. Morpheus was kind of right. The Oracle was kind of right. We still don't know. Is fate correct? We still don't know, in my opinion. I'm sure you've got some philosophy nerds out there that could really clarify and put a point on this. But from what little bit I understand, that's how I see it. Now, before we get into the philosophies here, there was something real curious about this film. When I was looking around trying to collect information, I saw that there was this guy named John Whitney. and he was a pioneer in digital film special effects, which is obviously very influential for the Matrix films. Obviously, tons of digital film special effects. And this guy, John Whitney, through Caltech and IBM, he made these weird little films in the 70s. They were just special effects, and it looked, you can watch them on YouTube, but they look like background screensavers to Windows 95, kind of, is how they look. But these films, they were called Matrix, Matrix 2, and Matrix 3, which I found very interesting. And what's curious is that he got into computer graphics when he worked at Lockheed Martin. And he was thinking about the trajectories of the missiles and stuff. And that's what made him get into this. And he would go on to work in films like Vertigo. Not bad, right? Now, the odd connection here is that Caltech is what connects us into aliens, the occult, Aleister Crowley, all these things. Because JPL, right, Jack Parsons, Jet Propulsion Laboratory, was started in 1936 at the Caltech Guggenheim Aeronautical Lab. And that's where they first started experimenting with rockets. The engineers involved were Jack Parsons, who obviously a follower of Aleister Crowley, I've talked about him many times, called himself the Antichrist, and a guy named Frank Molina. They were members of what they called the Suicide Squad, okay? Dangerous nerds. Well, Frank Molina, to those that have been with me a long time, they listened to my two Ghislaine Maxwell shows I did in the summer of 2020, in July. Well, we know that Ghislaine Maxwell's sister married Frank Molina's son, because I talked about it on that episode. And of course, JPL would become the rocket division of NASA, which teamed up with all the Operation Paperclip Nazis like Wernher von Braun to supposedly put man on the moon. What does all this mean? I don't know. Do with it what thou wilt, as they say. But yeah, this guy from Caltech, which connects us into Parsons and Crowley, he was, in some ways influential on this, I would imagine. I mean, the films are named the same thing, The Matrix 1, 2, and 3. Lastly, but definitely not leastly, let's talk about the philosophies here. First, this Matrix story is entirely about Socrates. William Irwin cites this in his essay in the book, The Matrix Philosophy. His essay is called Computers, Caves, and Oracles, Neo and Socrates. He calls Socrates the greatest story never told. And in it, he questions things like, how do we know what's real? When Morpheus talks about the splinter in the mind, he says that's what we explore, and that's what causes anguish, because there's no satisfying answers. And to go back to the Wachowski sisters and their claim that this movie was actually about transgender, that's the splinter in the mind. It's like they didn't feel right in their gender assignment. But remember, in Socrates' philosophy, ignorance is bliss. So it's almost like you're better off not knowing there's a splinter in the mind, because it just causes too much anguish, because there's no good answers. Socrates' mantra was, I know nothing, which is a good mantra to have, I guess, because you simply can't tell what is real. You just don't know. And it all comes down to belief, which is what I've been saying, right? That's like kind of my mantra I've been pushing, choose your own reality, because that's what it is. Neo was much like Socrates in that he initially refused the idea of fate. He wanted to believe in the free agency to do whatever it is that he wanted. No one's going to tell him what to do. He's like, cash me outside, how about that? And the parallels to ancient Greece that Neo goes through in the film was much like an initiate or a a person going to the Oracle at Delphi at the Temple of Apollo, because the Oracle at Delphi would tell people their fate. They believed in fate. They would get high off the vapors and, this is what I see, you know. And this, the Temple of Apollo at Delphi, was where Know Thyself was inscribed, which you see in the film in the Oracle's kitchen. And Socrates, he embraced this idea and lived by another motto that said, the unexamined life is not worth living. While all the other, you know, Greek mouth breathers around him, they were living blissfully in the trappings of society, never questioning anything, which we can all kind of identify with, right? Like, some days I wish I just liked going to work, watching sports, and calling it a day. I wish it was that easy. But Neo, he ultimately subscribes to this too, as opposed to Cypher, who was like, no, I'm all about that ignorant life. Put me back in the Matrix. I'm done. But you can't. You can't go back. Once you get the red pill, you can't go back. That's the problem. Another philosophical idea in the films is Plato's cave. You'll hear how the Matrix is where you're born into a prison for your mind. This is the same, if you listen to David Icke's lectures, this is kind of what he talks about, the prison without the bars. This all goes back to Plato's Republic, where he talked about the allegory of the cave. And where this fits in is that Socrates was Plato's teacher, which puts us into this lineage of the occult doctrine with Neoplatonism, which is like a new Platonic idea. And if, you know, the allegory of the cave, a real simplistic understanding of it, you've got, you know, I think there's like three prisoners chained up in a cave, and all they see is shadows on the wall. And they all think that's all of reality. That's all they know. And the one guy gets released from the shackles. He goes outside of the cave. He's like, whoa, there's all this stuff going on. He comes back in. Tells the other two, like, hey, the shadows on this cave, there's a lot more going on outside the cave. And they don't believe him. Right? Well, Neo, in this story, he's the prisoner in the cave that is released from the chains through Morpheus. When Thomas Anderson is inside the cave, all he sees is the shadows, but then Morpheus is like, bro, come outside the cave. And then he sees it. It's a higher level of abstraction. It's an idea when you, like systems thinking, if you're into systems engineering, it's called systems thinking. It's a higher level of abstraction. It's thinking above and beyond the box, right? You're abstracting to a higher reality. And that's what a lot of people talk about with this new age coming, is like this higher fifth dimension accessibility. And the idea is like there's a higher reality beyond the five senses. And the five senses can deceive us, right? We know that. You know that scientists in a lab can make a flavoring that tastes like smoke, and then they'll put it in your burger, and you think it was outside on the grill, and it wasn't. It's a chemical. They deceived your senses, and that can be done, you know, ad nauseum with virtual reality, augmented reality, 5G Internet of Things, and it goes on and on. But that splinter in the mind, that's the red pill. That's the invitation to come outside the cave. Consider something beyond what you've been told as the truth, that there's a higher reality out there. There's a couple other philosophies in here. The evil genius theory, you'll hear this called the evil demon or the evil scientist. You call it the evil nerd, maybe old Mark Zuckerberg. He wants to do this. But anyways, the idea of an evil genius at some point in history was able to put us into gooey pods, connect signals into our brains, manipulate our senses to believe everything going on around us is real, but it's not. It's kind of what the VR goggles are claiming they'll be able to do. And this one is more about the observations being deceptive as opposed to the actual experience being deceptive. This is kind of more like Project Bluebeam. But sort of, because a part of Project Bluebeam is this idea that, you know, you put on, example would be, you put on Elon Musk's Neuralink cap, which intercepts all the sensors in your brain. And then they put on a light show that your brain can't tell the difference. Your dumb brain. It's in the Neuralink. You're done. We also got Descartes' Meditations on the First Philosophy, where René Descartes, during the Enlightenment, I think it was during the Enlightenment, he's like, I'm going to form a basis for all scientific observation. Because that was the big thing about the scientific method, is observable, repeatable, pure science. There's going to be no more belief systems or gods involved with things, which in some ways is good, right? But he's like, I'm going to form a basis for all scientific observation. I'm going to suspend every single idea that the subjective mind can create or subscribe to. Any belief, it's got to go. And the results, if you read through it, he reduces down all the way to this axiom that the only thing one can be absolutely certain is I think, therefore I am. Right? You're probably familiar with that phrase. Meaning you couldn't doubt in your own existence if you couldn't have the thoughts of the doubt. A real mind F. Okay? Keep a PG over here. A real mind effer. Now, there's also an interesting passage. Oh, dear. Maybe I'll just read it for you. I'm going to read you from the book. From The Matrix and Philosophy. It's this book right here. If you're watching on the video stream, there's the book by William Irwin, or edited by William Irwin. It's got multiple authors, right? The counter to all this madness, we have to consider the distinction between possibility and probability. Now, this is something that I think the truther community struggles with, where it's saying, like, just because something is possible, like, it's possible we're living in a matrix, does that make it probable? Well, it's probably not true. Like, we can believe that we're living in a real world because it's justified on some levels. It's justified because all of our experiences support that idea. Except for deja vu. I think deja vu is weird. I don't understand that. That's the one where I'm kind of like, well, maybe. Maybe we're in a matrix. But in David Nixon's essay, it's called The Matrix Possibility, he talks about how there's beliefs, and I want to tie this into the idea that truthers take this idea of possibility and it somehow slips into probability using this argument. Because, you know, I always pick on the truthers. Someone's got to question everybody. I'm here to question everybody. But he says, in order to have even one belief about something, you must have a number of beliefs about that belief. And the example he provides, which illustrates this easier than explaining what he's saying. You got two people discussing bears, okay? The one guy says, you know, bears are scary. The other guy asks, why do you say that? And he goes through every attribute of a bear. He's like, do you think they're scary because they're big? And the guy's like, oh, I didn't know they were big. The second guy is like, you think they're scary because they're furry? And the first guy is like, huh? I didn't know they were furry. And so on and so on. And the guy says, bears are scary. But we find out he knows nothing about the bears. He doesn't know anything about them. And the idea is that that's absurd. You could be scared of bears because you have a belief that they're big. Because you've been told they're big. I've never seen a bear in real life. I believe that they're big things with massive claws. And you ever see the Bear Man documentary where he eats that dude? But if you didn't have any beliefs in it, you couldn't come to that conclusion. So it's absurd to think you'd have a belief unless you didn't have a multitude of beliefs about that belief. It's kind of the idea. And there's a whole play on possibility versus probability in there, okay? And that's the takeaway is, are we living in a simulation world? It's possible. And I apply a lot of these arguments where I don't know that we're not living in a simulation. Probably not, though. I've never, besides deja vu, had an experience that tells me this is a simulation. But, I mean, it's very possible, right? But it's just not probable. So I don't subscribe to it. Finally, Immanuel Kant, we've talked about him before. He says that people want to create their own heaven or hell. And to do so, they project their inner state to the world around them, which is exactly what Agent Smith says in this film. He says, "We made a perfect world and you morons couldn't handle it. You hated it. You hated perfection. You wanted that inner state of hell to exist in the world you live in." Mind blowing, right? And the reason why Immanuel Kant said, the reason humans do this, the reason they create their own hell is because it abdicates their responsibility to do something about it. That we want to believe there's a boogeyman that's the source of all our misery. And who does that sound like? It sounds like us. Let's be honest. We want to believe so hard there's an Illuminati out there trying to do all these horrific things. That explains why viruses exist. It explains why there's satanic stuff that happens. It explains why people die at concerts. Explains why people go into a school and shoot it up. Because there's a boogeyman out there. So that's the question, folks. Are we abdicating our own responsibility? Because we don't want to face the truth? I don't know. We're getting intense. We're getting so intense right now. If you're watching the video right now, you see my hands projecting intensity. We want to believe there's a boogeyman that's the source of all our misery and shortcomings. But the truth could be that we're just not changing our inner state because we're lazy or we're scared or we're in a state of fear. You got to harness the state of love, abundance. Make that inner world your outer world, which is hard to do, right? But Kant and Agent Smith argue that humans would rather be more miserable and blame the Illuminati or AI bots for the problems in our world rather than simply take charge of their own lives. That's a lot to think about. And that's where we're going to wrap up this first Matrix film. We're not going to really get into the philosophies in the next few episodes here. Not too hard on Matrix Revolutions, Matrix Reloaded, you know, I said that backwards, because Reloaded, then Revolutions. But yeah, lots of interesting ideas to unpack, and that's why this film is so powerful. There's so much going on. I mean, I've seen The Matrix 1, but probably it's got to be more than I've seen any other film. 20 times? I have no idea. 30 times? And I'm always picking up new ideas from it, especially when you read companion books like this. There's a lot of ways of looking at this stuff. So there you go. Matrix 1's completed. Stay subscribed for The Matrix Reloaded. We're going to go back in and talk about all the symbolism in the second Matrix film. Don't miss it. It's going to be good. What's a call to action? I always have you do something. Always have you do something. Check out my Instagram. That's what I want you to do. Instagram.com/IsaacWeishaupt. Link in the show notes. Check out that Ringer shirt I got coming. 70s Ringer shirts. If you like what you see, I'm modeling it. If you like what you see, stay tuned to my email newsletter. Go to IlluminatiWatcher.com. Go to the start here. Sign up for the email newsletter. Because when I get that box of shirts, any day now, I'm going to publish it, and I'm going to send the email notification, and once they're gone, they're gone. I mean, I could order some more. So I'm not a good businessman. I should just tell you they'll never be back. But if they don't sell that hot, I'm not going to buy another box of them. So if you want in on the Ringer shirts, go check it out on Instagram. Be sure to hit the like button. And then sign up for my email newsletter so you'll be the first to know. Okay? All right. Stay subscribed. Till next time, stay woke.